This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 29th of September, 2021. And markets suffering in the U.S. yesterday, their worst sell-off since May. At least that's what Bloomberg tells me. I didn't do the actual math myself, but I think the most interesting pattern, one we've talked about so much and one on full display yesterday, that is the interest rate sensitivity, especially those highly tuned equities to the yield level. And especially in the broad indices terms, that's the NASDAQ 100. You can see on slide two, the scale of the sell-off closing at a new low not seen as seen effectively since July, far outpacing where we are in the S&P 500, for example, where we're looking back towards that 100-day moving average. Haven't closed back, by the way, below that really since, well, now I'm forgetting since when. I think it was actually before, basically back around the pandemic outbreak timeframe. The 55-day was in focus, but now, of course, it's this pivot low. We've closed below the NASDAQ. That is the key, I guess, here, Peter, that sensitivity pattern. So it's not a complete across-the-board sell-off and everything, but it is pretty comprehensive.
It is. I mean, it was a 2.9% decline. And I think your slide two here shows it pretty vividly what happened yesterday. It was just a capitulation, basically. And you can see on the theme basket overview, as you say, all the high growth themes, so payments, cybersecurity, e-commerce, semiconductors, biotech or next-gen medicine, if you will, bubble stocks, all these things, crypto as well, were having a much higher downside beta to this move. So it was the equity duration at full display yesterday. It happens to be also the theme of our equity outlook, which is part of our broader quarterly outlook, which is out, I think, this week, if I'm not mistaken.
Next week.
Is it next week? Okay, next week. So enjoy that reading because we do highlight that NASDAQ, of course, is one of those with a higher equity duration. And then staying with the equity theme, we also have the Nikkei 225 on the back foot here this morning or in Asia session. Not a big surprise. It was catching up to the yesterday's session in global equities, but we had developments inside the, is it called LPD?
LDP.
LDP, yeah. Sorry. There was this fight between Kono and Kishida, and Kishida won. He's portrayed as being more soft-spoken. He is being described as a dove as well in terms of foreign policy. But during the campaign against Kono for the party's leadership, and now he's becoming the temporary prime minister until the general election is held within the next couple of weeks, he did in his campaign increase his rhetoric around Taiwan or the strait around Taiwan and the strait between China and Japan. And the expectation is at least that he will continue the upward lift in military spending from Japan. On the market reform side, I did write a bigger piece a couple of weeks ago when we had that big move in the Nikkei 225 futures. And my general takeaway is that there is a lot of rigidity in the labor market and the corporate structure in Japan. There's still a lot of market reforms that need to be done. I'm not sure Kishida is the right one to do that. I think on the margin, this is not necessarily a positive, and I don't think, you know, we'll see Japanese equities being this massive outperforming market.
That was Kishida seems to be the, you know, the insider favorite among party leaders and the candidate for continuity. This Taro Kono was apparently by far and away the most popular candidate among the general population and even in the rank and file within the party, and had a bit more pointed policy ideas on, especially he was against Abenomics and he was actually against Bank of Japan policy specifically on the negative rate. So that would have been the more interesting choice, but that's not what we got. I think we'll see what happens here, but it's the less imaginative choice, less sort of controversial choice for sure. All right, we need to get a switch over to energy markets. We'll get through how this fed into FX markets in a bit, but obviously two things have been feeding the sense of unease here, and that is the spike in energy prices and those input costs especially for corporates as well, but even on the crude oil level, and then the rise in yields. Ola, what's the latest here on, let's look at the natural gas side of things, but crude oil finally sort of correcting, and quite viciously so. I saw that Brent was off around $3 from the highs this morning.
Yeah, we're currently down almost 2%, and the move started yesterday afternoon. We had, I think there were several triggers. We had that weak consumer confidence number in the US. We had the worries that high prices could potentially curb demand. Then we had a 10% intraday tumble in natural gas, and natural gas really, I think, has been the main feeder for this for the rally in crude oil recently, because surging gas prices basically lead to expectations for consumers switching their consumption to away from gas into fuel products, and that that has been the latest drive up. So we had a peak above $80 yesterday on Brent. We failed to hold on, and now we're just trading water here at after having retraced somewhat. So I think the key is still here in the short term, at least. Just watch the direction of gas prices, and boy, they are just all over the place. As I mentioned, a 10% intraday, a top to bottom drop in gas in the US yesterday. And we also saw a gas price in Europe from a 12% rally early on. They almost finished the day unchanged. And today we're back up by around 7%. These are just extreme volatility and moves. And it just highlights a market where liquidity is poor. We have to remember some of these key energy and gas and power markets in Europe and Asia, they are not really traded that liquid in terms of liquid futures markets. They are over-the-counter markets. And that basically means that several more and more market makers, they're pulling away from quoting in size here, because this is really just such a troubled market to trade. But the underlying reason why gas prices are high, they have not gone away. They have probably even become even worse. We have a supply crunch around the world, both in Asia and in Europe. And US now also worries, because obviously with gas prices so much higher around the world, it is feeding into higher LNG exports from the US, which will also keep the domestic US market tight. So are we out of the woods yet? I certainly don't think so. We need to see either demand destruction kick in, or we need to see Russian supplies pick up, or we need to see potential forecast for milder winter ahead. So this is what we're watching. And I've just put in on slide 6 here today, in today's deck, just to give you an idea about what a crazy month it's been so far. This is just the trading over the last 29 days. And as you can see, we have some massive spikes and massive drops as well across the space. So it's really a volatile month.
All right. And just on this Russian natural gas story, I mean, we don't have all the specifics. We were kind of floating a little bit, some ideas and sympathy with the conspiracy theories that Russia was looking to tilt the German election a little bit by refraining from supplying or adding supplies into the Western Europe system and encouraging the adaptation or the opening of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. But maybe that's not true. Maybe some of the gas is actually being diverted to China, where there's a huge need for that due to coal shortages. Do you have any update on what's going on there with the Russian natural gas supply situation?
Well, only that they are adamant that they have been fulfilling their contracts. So longer term contracts with the Gazprom have all been delivered upon. Short term deliveries or short term contracts have not been issued, and that's obviously where the whole conspiracy lies. That they have not, even though Europe had been asking for more gas, they have not been willing or able to deliver that gas. There are reports that Russia, just like Europe, have been struggling to refill their storage levels. And obviously, one thing you as a country would think of first and foremost, that's your own population and your own domestic security. And Russia not being able to deliver gas into a very cold winter, that's obviously that's not going to happen. So they will first and foremost refill their own storage levels before they think about what they can do in terms of exports. But obviously these prices are extremely profitable for whoever has got gas available to sell. And you are right, John, there's been some diverting flows towards Asia. The demand for coal is also heating up. Coal prices are also at, I think, the highest level in 12 years. We have to remember that China cut off their coal imports from Australia early this year, and they've basically been looking to the markets where normally Europe sources their coal. That's South Africa and Russia, and that basically means that the competition for coal has been heating up as well. So I think we need to keep a close eye on China, because there are lots of reports about their both gas and coal shortages, and again, similar to Russia, that's the last thing they want to experience into the winter months.
Right. And it is so remarkable that all of this is happening and we're not even out of September yet. The cold winter months ahead in the Northern Hemisphere. And Peter, you've got a chart up here of these import prices. The latest one was that out this morning out of Germany. The import price is hitting
for August
16.5% year on year for August.
Yeah. And it was the expectation was 16%. And I just thought it was interesting when you put it up in a longer time perspective. I mean, you can see the two previous. Sorry, it's on slide 7. Thank you, John. And on the two previous big spikes that are at levels higher than what we're currently witnessing here in Germany was the energy crisis of 73 and 79. And we're right now in an unfolding new energy crunch, new energy crisis in Europe. And you're just wondering, I mean, could we go to 20, many, even 25? I don't know. I mean, it's just that the global economy is just hit from so many different angles. You know, this energy crunch, the global supply constraints, you know, Vietnam is basically closed down. We have their GDP number out this morning for Q3, minus 6.2% versus 2.3% positive growth expected. The whole country is basically shut down. As I said, all Nike's footwear factories are closed. I mean, it's just, it just goes on and on and on and on. And I'm just really, really excited, maybe even a little bit nervous going into this Q3 earnings season. Starting in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, that guidance is going to be just so interesting to see what different stripes of company reporting in terms of their outlooks and securing supply chains and all that stuff. All right, let's look over at Forex, because Forex is heating up quite a bit. Obviously, with volatility increasing in the equity space and risk sentiment, you're getting some of that feeding through into Forex. A bit interesting yesterday at times, if you look at something like Eurodollar, you would think with rising U.S. Treasury yields, those rising aggressively and with the risk off, you'd see a bit more pressure on Eurodollar, given especially that it's at a twitchy support level, that big range support of 116.64, which, by the way, gave way just before we came here to record the podcast. So interesting that it was a bit sidelined. And I think some of the pressure there might have been offset by Euro sterling buying, because sterling is getting a lot of negative attention here. UK looking increasingly isolated with its post-Brexit misery, with all of the with the limitations around their infrastructure and their capacity, shortage of truckers, gas stations running out because of panic buying of petrol, et cetera, and with the UK's austerity principles on the way. I think the market got on the wrong way around post-German election and saying, okay, we've got a muddled German election result. That's going to mean less of a commitment to the EU from Germany. You know, that's less Euro positive. That was the less Euro positive scenario, et cetera. But with risk off, I think that hits sterling far harder. So we saw a reversal of that, and we saw cable very importantly. So sterling versus the dollar, as you can see on slide 4, really giving way, a huge support level, that 136 area, smashing down through that. We've seen some follow-up selling. We're into 135 just before I went into the studio. 135, by the way, a level that goes all the way back to the 1980s. If that gives way, you have a semi head and shoulder sort of formation here as well. We could be headed towards something like 132. Maybe even 130 if we're in for a really rocky session in terms of this, where this risk sell-off takes us. So I think everything lining up for sterling weakness here, unless something intervenes. And then the yield sensitivity for the Japanese yen has been a story for quite some time. You can see on slide 5, dollar yen touching and just exceeding that 111.66 level. To my mind, you know, to really power up to 114.50 to 115 area, which is the next big chart area there, we'd have to see U.S. Treasuries powering up above, let's call it the 10-year benchmark, well above 1.75%. I think the yen gets a little bit of a bid here if we really go, you know, if the risk off situation gets even worse, which I expect would also start to temper any further rise in the very near term, at least in U.S. Treasury yields. But that's just obviously rank speculation. We have quarter end here as well. Some of those effects can be pronounced in the Japanese yen, watching that 111.66 level. And then again, we just broke, at least just before I came in here, I don't know, I don't have a screen in front of me right now, where the euro dollar is. That's a big level, the 116.64 lows. Is that opening up for that 115 or even 114 level in euro dollar? Not to mention that the sort of risk correlated currencies are obviously not set to do very well if we remain in sort of risk off mode. But just, besides risk off, we've got plenty else going on. And Ola, I want to get back to you briefly on gold, because I think, to me, while gold is weak, it is rather outperforming the backdrop, if you will, in terms of the dollar strength and the yield rises. It's kind of interesting there that sort of, even though it's kind of a quiet thing, the fact that that is the case.
That's right, John. And I think one of the reasons is basically that gold and especially silver, they are underowned right now by the speculative community. They have been cutting length for several months as the momentum has been fading, and we've been in a downward trajectory since August last year. And I think what's interesting, and I think that's also for wide discussion. We also talked about that in our internal meeting this morning. We're seeing all these price pressures emerging around the world, and we're seeing hardly any change in forward inflation expectations in the U.S. While bond yields have been moving up this week, it has really, as you can see on slide 8, I just highlighted nominal, break-even, and real yields, and you can see break-even yields, they're still stuck in a let's say wide range, 2.2 to 2.4%, but while both nominal and with that also real yields has been moving higher. So you're right, gold is responding reasonably well to the fact, even though we got real yields moving higher and we got dollar strengthening. And the question is really for how much further, how much longer can this the bond market continue to ignore inflationary pressures, and if they suddenly change their tack and we see break even yields moving higher, that potentially could be a good buying signal to gold. But for now, we are somewhere around, I'll say, $50 below relative safety, so there's no urgency right now.
All right, and then also in the equity space, Peter, besides our anticipation around the upcoming earnings season, which I guess kicks into gear in a couple of weeks. There's a couple of names you're pulling out here that have absolutely nothing to do with the sort of risk on, risk off, phenomenon we're talking about here.
No, we're highlighting the semiconductor industry because it was one of the parts of the equity market that fell the most yesterday. And Micron, we haven't talked much about earnings because basically I said on Friday and also on Monday that it's this week was very boring in terms of earnings, but. You know, we could have pulled out one, but why make it one slide for one company? So, but we did it today because Micron Technology was one of those that reported this week, and it's one of the rather larger players in the memory chip industry. So they're battling with Samsung, among others companies, and the shares were down 7% if you take the decline in the session yesterday, on top of the extended declines in aftermarket trading. So 7% down there. Their forecast was very, very disappointing, to say at least where consensus was. And then the big issue here is the prices for memory chips are apparently coming down. So that's a head scratcher right there. And then ASML, which is the biggest equipment maker of use for semiconductor production. They create these lithography machines. They have lifted their 2025 revenue forecast a bit, and they are expecting long-term growth rates in the industry of 11% annualized, and with the key focus, at least in the U.S., John, of trying to secure more semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S. There are several of these semiconductor plants being underway. They're under construction right now in the U.S., and that, of course, is feeding into semiconductor equipment spending, which is the business of ASML.
All right. And it's going to be very interesting session, the degree to which this negative energy continues. We've got, futures up in the U.S. at least quite strongly. Some of the dollar upside, I was just reviewing some of my prices on my phone here, actually rebounding a bit, or the currencies versus the dollar rebounding a bit. So, do we switch back into risk off, or people buying every dip or buying this dip? We'll see. In terms of the macro calendar, there's lots of it on there today. A lot of it is central bank speakers, many from the Fed. There's an ECB forum going on where there are some Fed speakers there, or at least Fed Chair Powell is there, together with all the major central bank heads actually from around the DM. And we can watch for signals there. I'm not sure we'll get many, but we'll see the Fed speakers all over the shop as well. With their various thoughts, there was Bullard was out saying he wants to start the taper in November. That's no big surprise. And we start off with the PMI cycle overnight in China with their official manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMI, and then the Caixin manufacturing number as well tonight. And then, Ola, I guess we have the weekly crude numbers from the DOE. in the US. Is the market pretty sensitive around these numbers?
Well, they are, because what we saw as well, one of the reasons why we dipped overnight was basically the American Petroleum Institute. They came out with their weekly report the day ahead of the official EIA one, and they actually said showed a surprise stock build across the board, both in crude oil and fuel products, diesel and gasoline. And that's not what the market was expected, if you look at surveys ahead of today's number. So yeah, that could be, the market is looking for confirmation that stocks actually did rise last week. If they don't, and they come out as expected with a drop, then that would be the eighth consecutive weekly drop, and that potentially could add another fresh bit back into the market. So I think for a change, it could be quite an interesting report this afternoon.
Okay, and then two items actually I need to mention here news-wise. So one, there's supposed to be a vote today in the Senate on a bill to implement some sort of stopgap funding for the government, so we don't lurch straight into a government shutdown scenario after tomorrow, because tomorrow is the end of the U.S. fiscal year. This one is being disconnected from attempts to lift the debt ceiling more permanently. So this is simply a stopgap measure to keep things funded through December 3rd. And they'll still have to decide on the debt ceiling, but at least it would delay the immediate sense of risk around a shutdown. I'm running out of time, obviously, but we need to track this issue very carefully, and not to mention what's going on with the infrastructure votes. That supposedly set for tomorrow, it looked like the first round of voting in the House was not there for House Speaker Pelosi. The progressives insisting they want to connect it with the bigger infrastructure bill. And then there's a handful of moderate Democrats that are against this. Connecting the two together. So it's potentially worst outcome for the Biden presidency would be that this all fails and nothing gets done at all around fiscal. And that makes the fiscal cliff even worse next year. There's so much in flux here. We need to just track all these stories, and those certainly could get more market attention through tomorrow. The second thing was a speech by Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, who spoke very forcefully against Powell being renominated to become for a second term as Fed chairman. His term ends at the end of January next year, so the time is running out. To what degree her speech will sway others in the Senate or sway Biden, it's not known. But we also have Secretary of Treasury Yellen, former Fed chair, who has spoken positively about Powell. So at least he has support from that angle in Biden's own cabinet. So we'll have to watch that as well. The alternative, if there is an alternative, and if he is not reappointed or renominated, would be Lael Brainard, who is seen as possibly even more dovish than Fed Chair Powell. So we'll have to watch that as well, and all of the stuff going on in the Congress this week, especially tomorrow. With that, we're going to call it a day. Stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.